Hey everyone, John here. Just a quick word of warning. We will be spoiling this film in its entirety. So if you have not seen this film and you don't want it spoiled for you, just hit pause real quick and go and watch the movie and then come back and enjoy the show.
Why don't you just go away and come back at midnight? Shoo.
Hey honey, this is a real big fucking gun.
This ain't no ham on rap, pal.
What the hell are you doing?
Saving your life. I would have been here sooner, but I was thinking up that ham on rye line.
You think I can't take him? Well, you probably scared the other ones away.
What others?
Headhunters, Nimrod. They don't travel alone. You're always the stupid. Did you take lessons?
I took lessons.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Surviving Chick Flicks. I'm John.
I'm Sammy.
And I'm Joseph.
Holy shit, are we all three here?
We are. Yes. I'm back.
We are.
I have yet to hear what kind of damage was done last week.
I think minimal.
Just don't look.
I only did the Boston accent once, so I think we're good.
I feel like. I should have been there to defend Marky Mark's honor. I feel like it probably disparaged in some form. And
No.
Actually, we had nothing to say about him.
The only people that got disparaged last week were Vera Farmiga's job as a therapist. Not her performance, but what her character did.
That's the only character.
Thing that
right.
got. Yeah. But this week. Yeah.
I will say before I knew I wasn't going to be able to be there, I did some like minimal research where I went and listened to interviews that Mark Wahlberg have done and Matt Damon, because I wanted to see, I was curious how much they like upped their Boston accents for the movie. And they definitely did.
Marty said that Marky Marks was so thick that the audience might need subtitles. That's the only thing I read about.
Yeah, but it wasn't as much like listening to them in interviews. Mark Wahlberg has the thickest natural accent. Like, his is the least watered down. Matt Damon, you can definitely still hear it. Ben Affleck's is pretty much non-existent. So I'm not surprised. But, you know, I have to say, Leo's was not as bad as I thought it was going to be, or as I remember it.
Yeah. Too. Yeah. Oh, I mean, Leo attempted more of an accent than. The other star of the movie, Jack Nicholson, who just showed up and was Jack.
Yeah, he didn't need to. I think it would have gone poorly.
So is this our Redeparted? Are we doing the Redeparted before the rewatchables?
Well, I feel like we just had to give it a moment.
But this week, we're not talking about The Departed. We are talking about apparently a romantic movie because it has the word kiss in the title. The Long Kiss Goodnight. And this... Chick flick, right?
To explain to us where in the world that title came from, because it seems to have no connection.
Let me defend that in a little bit. Why don't we play the trailer first, and then we can break down who got kissed and when.
Hello, girls. Caitlin, come help me in the kitchen. Hurry up, because I forget where it is.
That's her mom. She's got amnesia.
What if you couldn't remember your real name, your first kiss, or your last goodbye?
I don't remember.
Honey, you have an ETA on that cure?
Stow it.
And then suddenly...
I used to do this! I'm a chef! Yahoo!
Without warning...
Give me something else!
Celery! Scallions!
All your memories.
Name's Charlie. I'm coming back.
Came flooding back to you.
Evening, Charlie. Long time.
One bullet at a time.
I got movement on Samantha Kane.
Good.
I may have a lead on someone. We still have some of her stuff.
This man, he's gonna help me find some things out. So we'll be safe.
Your full name is Charlene Elizabeth Baltimore.
This could be trouble.
My name is Samantha Kane.
No, 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 forget all that.
I'm in the PTA.
Then quit. You're an assassin working for the United States government.
We have 24 hours. We find her and we kill her.
Run for your life!
Charlie Baltimore's alive, sir.
Who are you?
My name's Charlie. The spy.
Back when we first met, you were all like, oh, boy, I burned the darn muffins. Now, you go into a bar, 10 minutes later, sailors come running out. What up with that?
This fall.
Honk if there's any trouble.
Yeah, so Miss Daisy, I be honking.
If you have plans for a calm, quiet evening.
Cover your ears. Hey, should we get a dog?
It's time to kiss them all. Good night.
I love you.
Gina Davis, Samuel L. Jackson, The Long Kiss. Good night. Directed by Renny Harlin.
All right. The Long Kiss Goodnight, starring Gina Davis, Samuel L. Jackson, Patrick Malahide, Craig Bierko, Brian Cox, David Morse, G.D. Spradlin, and for some reason, Larry King, directed by Renny Harlin. Let's start the way we always do. Joseph, Sammy, when did you first see this movie?
Well, I think I know when Sammy first saw it, so go ahead, Sammy.
Yeah, let's just get that out of the way super quick. About a couple hours ago, roughly.
Yeah. But I didn't get to see it in theaters, because at the time, I think I was too young to go see an R-rated movie in theaters, but I did see it, like, maybe a year or so later on this. And this was around the time where Gina Davis was, like, kept coming out with movies, and this one was not one of her big movies. This one at Third Island, but I do like most of her stuff from this time.
This wasn't one of her big movies, sir. This screenplay sold for $4 million.
I'm talking about like box office wise.
Oh,
it didn't do very well.
Did she have many of those?
She did have some good ones, but
Beetlejuice, maybe, like, or is that like a whole classic that didn't do well at the time?
I don't remember. I was a child.
Well, like Beetlejuice, Thumb on the Wheeze, stuff like that. She had some big hits, but Cutthroat Island really didn't help.
No. So, funny story about Cutthroat Island, which was also a Renny Harlin movie. Apparently, the studio passed on Paul Verhoeven's film about the Crusades that he was intending to make because... he couldn't guarantee that the. I feel like we're going to end up doing that movie one day, so Joseph can possibly defend it.
I actually enjoy that movie.
I enjoy Caligula. That's not a. It's not a great hill to stand on.
Subject us to so.
Yeah.
And remember, pink flamingos still exists, Joseph. So.
Papa ooh mow mow, Papa ooh mow mow. Can't wait. I can't wait because I think there was like some other movie we were threatening her with, and I was just like, no matter who shows her what movie, they both have a screaming asshole on screen. It's just a different type in each film. So Sammy, you watched this film today. Beat you. I watched this film yesterday. I watched this film with commercials because it is streaming on Pluto TV. And I love that Pluto TV has like 200 channels and some on-demand movies of, you know, free content out there. And it's actually a really cool channel. But But they shove commercials in every 10 minutes and they do not care what is happening in the movie. It could be in the middle of a scene. It could be in the middle of a sentence. They're shoving their three commercials at you no matter what. So it took all fucking day to watch this movie. And I'm not going to say if that, you know, I'm not trying to show my hand on how I felt, but there was a part where I'm like, will this movie hurry up and fucking end? I need to do, like, other things. So.
And see, I don't have that problem because I actually own this movie on Blu-ray, and so it was just a nice, breezy movie for me.
Yeah. I should have, like, you know, traveled to the place in our town that has used DVDs for $4.95 and be like, what are the, you know, that would be the one time they don't have it, and the next time I would go back and they'll have, like, six copies. Like, when did this movie become Wedding Crashers? I think I avoided this film because this was pretty, not as notorious as Cutthroat Island, but I remember the critics kind of savaging this film because this was the, I think this was the beginning of the Shane Black falling out of favor with Hollywood, because the screenplay sold for $4 million for this film. And I'm pretty sure $4.1 million of that went towards cocaine because Shane Black had a little problem. But, I mean, he was able to come back like 8 years later with Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. But I think this is like the last big project for Shane. Because we didn't mention this film was written by Shane Black, who wrote Lethal Weapon and Last Boy Scout and this movie. And then we came back with Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and Nice Guys and that Predator movie that was not as good as it should have been.
Okay, I hate to say this. And by the way, this is not showing my hand, I promise. But it absolutely floors me how you can have a writer that can write something as good as Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and then write something like this. Not that I think, like I said, I'm not showing my hand. Not that I think it was a bad movie. This is my personal opinion. I don't think it was anywhere near the caliber of Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which is a phenomenal movie.
I would agree with you on that, because there are some there is some dialogue that was like, that was a little off.
Yeah. It's kind of... Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was like, there were some choices that were off, and probably stuff that was altered or wasn't directed as well as it should have been. I agree. Rennie Harlan's not a terrible director, but he probably wasn't the best fit for this movie, but I still think that
movie. Which is weird, because Shane Black actually wrote it hoping Rennie Harlan would direct it. I wish it was in the hands of another director, but just because he wrote one good movie does not mean everything he wrote was great. I mean,
no.
I kind of call that James Vanderbilt syndrome, because as good as Zodiac is, I have not loved everything James Vanderbilt has written since or before, because Darkness Falls was part of that. But
yeah, everybody can be Sorkin.
Yeah. I mean, he is a step above Joe Ezra House, who was another highly paid screenwriter. And, you know, Shane Black, you know, this may not be Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, but it's not Showgirls either. So.
And a lot of it may have come down to the directing, right? Like, a lot of it may not have been, because I don't think there was anything particularly bad about the script.
No, the rule is always blame Rennie Harlan when and if possible. Even though I don't hate Rennie Harlan, but it seems like for every movie of his that I do really like, there are some we'll go with missteps. But I mean, he did direct maybe the fourth best Nightmare on Elm Street film, or fifth possibly, with Nightmare on Elm Street 4. I love Deep Blue Sea.
Oh, that's
and Cutthroat Island.
Oh, okay.
The aforementioned one. But I will die on the hill that the best thing that Rennie Harlan has directed to date is still Die Hard 2.
Yeah.
Also, this is... go ahead.
No, I was like, because I really like Die Hard 2 as well.
Yeah. Also, this is maybe entry number 3 or 4 in the Shane Black Does Christmas motif that he has running. Something that started in Lethal Weapon and continued through The Nice Guys. So
yeah, technically this could have passed as a Christmas movie, but...
All of Shane Black's movies, with the exception of The Predator, could pass as Christmas movies. You know, Lethal Weapon, Iron Man 3. I mean, they're the same movie. But you asked us a question before we did the cast and everything. The title, The Long Kiss Goodnight. This is just a generic title. It has nothing to do with the film you know, other than maybe her giving her old life the final kiss goodbye. But this film has a moment where they were in the hotel room and they were watching a film called The Long Goodbye. It's a Robert Altman movie. This movie committed the sin of showing me a better movie in your movie. Not showing my hand, but Robert Altman is a better director than Rennie Harlan. But Long Goodbye was a Philip Marlowe novel, and Altman directed it in the 70s. And it's just a generic private eye kind of title. Could mean something, doesn't necessarily mean anything, but it also did make me kind of want to go watch Long Goodbye again, because that was a great movie, and it was kind of a inspiration for The Big Lebowski. None of which are movies we're talking about today. We're talking about Long Kiss Goodnight. And Joseph, you're kind of the, since this is your pick, I'm going to put you on the spot. I need you to do something for me.
Okay.
I need you to tell the people the story of The Long Kiss Goodnight.
Okay.
So I get to do the plot synopsis.
Yeah, you do.
All right, well, forgive me, because I don't really know. Oh, wait, do I remember her name? Was it Samantha? Because I hardly ever. I'm getting to the point where I don't remember
her name. That was like her cover name. Her regular name, I want to say, it was Charlotte.
It is Charlie. Charlene.
Yeah. Well, the original name was Sam Kane, which is a anagram for amnesiac.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You see her as Sam, as Samantha at the beginning, and she gives you over pretty much a, I'm blanking on it for some reason.
Voiceover narration.
That she doesn't remember anything past 8 years. She doesn't know what her life was like. And of course, if you've seen the or the trailer, you know she was a badass assassin. Well, things happen to where she resurfaced, and people start finding out that knew her in her past life, that she's still alive. And they start coming after her, trying to kill her, because she might know stuff. Well, in doing so, they have pretty much reawakened who she is. And she starts slowly remembering who she is and trying to figure out what's going on and why these people are after kill her. Especially one that's a complete psychopath and fun to watch in this movie. I'm not as good as this as John, because I didn't prepare for this.
Okay, by you saying that, that implies I prepare for all of them.
You prepare more than I do. But it goes on a nice joyride throughout the country with Samuel Jackson to try to figure out what's going on. Who is a private detective who is kind of down on his luck, and he's not, from what he says, he's never done anything right in his life and decided he wants to try to start doing that. The bridge. I think it was a bridge. Yep. And try to create a 9/11 before the 9/11 happened, pretty much.
Okay, yeah, that stood out whenever they kept talking about the World Trade Center bombing that happened in 93, and how they were claiming that it was, you know, their operation, and they blamed the Muslims. I was like, ooh, that aged like milk.
But, you know, it's honestly fairly true of what happened.
Yeah.
That would be biting commentary if it was made like a few years later after... after 9/11.
They would have been too scared to make this after 9/11.
This would not have come out like a few years. It would have been like 10 or 12 years after.
Or just that part would not. Well, no, there is the whole terrorist subplot of this movie. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But of course, she starts realizing who she is, and she starts realizing that she questions whether she wants to be a mother once she realizes who she is again, because she's a completely different person. She is kind of cold-hearted, and then she starts to learn to be a mother. Who she actually is Charlie. And of course, there's these explosions, and all the bad guys die, and they win.
And Samuel L. Jackson nearly died.
Many times.
Yeah. Well, actually, the test cut that they showed test audiences, he died in the movie, and someone stood up and screamed, "You can't kill Samuel L. Jackson," and they went back and did some reshoots, and that's why he lived to the end.
Yeah, because
why did nobody do that with Leo in like every movie ever?
Because in The Departed, his death freed him. And in Titanic, it was because Rose is selfish.
Yes, I do not disagree with you. But I just feel like he dies in too many movies. So.
Well, Django Unchained, he kind of deserves it.
Yeah. And he was still alive at the end of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
This is true. And The Revenant.
Yeah, he got it eaten by a bear in that movie and lived.
This is true. I'm not arguing.
And he lived at the end of Wolf of Wall Street. Joseph, did he live to the end of Critters 3?
I haven't seen that movie in years, so I don't remember.
Well, he would have been a child, so did the child live?
That doesn't matter back in the 80s. They killed everybody in the 80s.
I'm just saying they could have shared the door.
We're not talking about the boat movie today. That happens later.
Well, anyway, I for one am glad that they did not kill Samuel Jackson.
I agree, because I think his and Gina Davis's chemistry was really good in this movie.
It was surprisingly good. What I kind of missed, and so explain this to me. I don't know if it was just like where my head was at when the movie was starting that I just missed the connection, but how did they connect? How did they meet?
Okay, I was actually confused about that. Did she hire him?
No, in the beginning of the movie, he's been tracking her because he's been trying to find the next big score, pretty much. And so go ahead.
I was going to say, it felt to me like she was paying him to figure out who she was.
Yeah, I'm a little confused on that, too. That's the one part that really, it's like, because they just kind of become buddy-buddy really quickly, and I'm just like, they don't even know who each other are.
Yeah.
So it feels like something was missing out of that part of the movie that just they just kind of left out, or they just decided not to even worry about it.
Yeah. They needed some exposition.
They really did. That was one of those, but they did show him many times at the beginning of the movie that they have been tracked. Because it's supposed to be the next big thing that might give him a payday. Because she's pretty well off, and so he thinks, hey, I can get money off of her, and he said, I milked this pretty well. And it turns out it was much bigger than he thought.
Yeah. I will say that he does live up to the stereotypical movie private eye, because they're always down on their luck. Honestly, the fact that they were showing The Long Goodbye in the hotel room is telling, because Samuel L. Jackson has a lot of shades of that reading of Philip Marlowe. Because Philip Marlowe in that movie is a bum down on his luck. Kind of like Lebowski.
Yeah.
It's all connected.
Well, I said, I definitely liked his character and how he approached things. Because he's not necessarily an awful person. He just makes dumb decisions sometimes.
Yeah,
and he's trying to get it together.
Yeah, I do love his introduction with the prostitution sting.
That
where they hired two bums.
He's like, maybe you should get, you know, not hire bums. You want me to do hire professional actors? Come on.
Yeah, that did throw me whenever the one cop, you know, in air quotes, started puking, and I was just like, is this a rookie? And then it was like, oh no, he's an alcoholic bum. Okay, cool.
I don't know how y'all felt about it, but I really liked the villain in this movie. His introduction just sold it.
Yeah, I liked him too, and I've only seen him, I think, as a bad guy. Like, I've never seen him as a good guy in anything, and I don't know if that's just because he's got one of those faces, or what the deal is, but I guess what I struggled to figure out was his connection to all of this.
They don't go into huge detail on it, but they pretty much have a history together. And he was supposed to kill her.
No way.
Yeah. He was also in Matilda the Musical, Guys and Dolls. I mean, he's done a lot of stuff. He hasn't done a lot of stuff lately. His most recent thing was like a 2019 film called Fair Market Value, which I'd never heard of.
But yeah, he was one of these the villains I really loved hating in this movie, because he was a despicable person, but at the same time, you could tell the guy was just having a blast doing this movie.
So a Shane Black villain, if you will.
Definitely. And I loved it whenever he was torturing the guy and he gets the call that she's alive. And he's just like, I'm so sorry. It's just like he's apologizing to him that he's had to halt his torture.
Yeah.
So were they like bad actors within the U.S. government? Is that who they were?
I think they were, yeah, what it is, like a, there was a guy that just in the U.S. government that just wanted to pretty much control things whenever he shouldn't have, I guess. I'm not really exactly sure.
I think he summed it up pretty well whenever he said he was essentially a fundraiser.
Yeah.
For the program.
He just wanted to steal money and people started figuring out and he didn't like that. So he goes straight to murder.
As you do.
Yeah, definitely. Why wouldn't you?
So we got into this a little bit in the pre-show, but according to the trivia I read up on this movie, this is Samuel L. Jackson's favorite performance that he did. Now, I would argue he's been in better movies, but I mean, I can kind of see that because, you know, you can tell he was at least having fun on this. I don't know about Gina, if she was having fun, because she was married to the director at this point and then divorced from the director 2 to 3 years later.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Yeah, because he cheated on her and the divorce happened after his like secretary had his child.
Oh, wow.
God.
Yeah.
So she may not if you need his time on this.
Probably not. But this is, you know, one of three films that he and Gina made together. He was a producer on a film that she did called Speechless, and then they did the pirate movie and then this movie together.
Well, even
and
if
then
she
he went and blew it all.
Even if she didn't have a good time on this movie, she did a great job in it, I thought. Because
of course, she didn't come back for the shark movie, but Samuel L. Jackson sure did.
Well, yeah, all the performances were good.
Oh, so John, how did you like Brian Cox in this movie?
I always love Brian Cox. Whatever Brian Cox is doing, if it's in a movie, I am a big fan of it. Because, and it's weird to think this is like 10 years away, 10 years after his stint as Hannibal in Manhunter. But
yeah, and I remember, of course, I watched this movie before. Of course, X-Men wasn't out yet, but I remember watching this movie.
Yeah.
But I forgot he was in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he brings a stellar performance every time, and he was great in this. And he doesn't have a huge part in it either.
No, but, I mean, he has some great lines, and he was a lot of fun to watch. I think he's doing voiceover for McDonald's now, so I guess that succession paycheck for HBO isn't paying enough, poor guy.
Actually, I think he...
Let's get him some work.
I think he was doing those commercials before Succession came, so I think he's still under contract, maybe.
I am just now noticing them, because Succession's been going for, like, what, 3 years now?
Oh, he's been in the commercials for a lot longer than 3 years, because I remember I was like, is that Brian Cox doing McDonald's?
Yeah. Ironically, that was the one commercial that Pluto TV didn't shove into this movie.
That would have been interesting.
I will say, if you have to watch, if you're having to watch a movie, you know, and having to pay attention and not just for, I'm going to throw this on and just, you know, relax, don't watch it on Pluto, because I was pissed off for the last hour of the movie.
I feel bad that you had this experience, because I just popped in my Blu-ray and it was just a fun, breezy movie.
Well, I have watched movies on Pluto before, and I'm kind of more used to like Tubi, where Tubi is pretty reasonable, and they also warn you, hey, like ads are coming, get ready.
And for what I remember, they go back at least about 30 seconds.
Yeah.
So it seems like you didn't miss anything.
Mm-hmm. But with this, I mean, there were literal times they would cut into a sentence. So. I love the fact that I got to watch it for free, but after a certain point, I was like, I should have just rented this damn thing.
It was not worth
that that $4.99 rental fee started looking really good.
But how did you feel about all the different stunts? Because they go over the top with the stunts.
I mean, it felt very, you know, mid-90s action movie.
Yeah, I mean, the graphics weren't phenomenal, but they were there.
Well, I'm talking about, like, over the top. Just like, she doesn't have a car because they're all gone. So she gets her skates and just starts skating down to come after them.
I think it's where you give credit to Shane Black, because, you know, he writes action very well, and he also... I think this is whenever the cocaine benefited him.
Because he'd come up with batshit crazy ideas.
Yeah.
Because most people wouldn't be like, hey, let's just have her ice skate to the criminals and just shoot them down that way.
Mm-hmm. This is weird to say, but there's no other way to phrase it. I thought the torture scenes in this movie were great, too.
They were really well done.
Mm-hmm.
Especially whenever they were dunking her in the water.
Yeah, when she was able to get her wrist out of the ropes, it was bringing back... You've seen Gerald's Game, right?
Actually, I have not.
Oh, I should probably not say anything then. Let's just say it just reminded me of that movie. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was actually kept me on the edge of my seat whenever I was like, how is she going to... I know she gets out because I've seen it before, but it's like, it's been a while since I've seen it. So I was like, I don't remember how she gets out of this.
Yeah.
Just kind of powers through her engine.
Well, and also being underwater, I guess the water lubricated the ropes. You know, as it does. Plus, it was cold water, so her wrist was shrinking a little bit. It was, you know, in the cold.
Well, and I thought the makeup they did on her to show that she was extremely cold was really good, too.
Yeah.
I don't feel like you need to justify some of the crazy stunts and situations in this film. It's like trying to justify Fast and the Furious. You just kind of have to believe it and move on.
Well, no, I just thought that it was some of the stunts in here were quite unique, especially in the 90s, because I had never seen a couple of things that they've done before in this movie, and ever since, actually.
And 4 years after this, the Point Break remake came out, and it was called Fast and the Furious. So that was back when it was still resembling a reality.
We don't know which one, but it was a reality.
That first one is pretty grounded. And
it is.
And then by the time they get to the 5, they're like, eh, fuck reality.
They're superheroes now.
Yeah. Honestly, that was the better decision.
Yeah, because if they would have kept going with it the way that was, I'm like, this nobody would keep watching. Because it's like, okay, it's the same thing over and over.
Yeah. Well, I think it's telling that I think the two worst entries in the franchise happened before 5.
True.
And one of them is just bad because it's just a boring reset button.
She probably got looked over a little bit, but she did a really good job.
She did.
Yeah, she did do a really good job, and she's actually been fairly active.
She's still doing stuff.
And she's been in a lot of Shane Black stuff because she was in Iron Man 3 and Nice Guys.
Yeah.
I feel like they put her in some fairly adult situations, and she still did a pretty good job.
Well, I mean, that's what you get when you sign up to do a Shane Black movie. Danny Torrance in The Shining, the Kubrick version, didn't know they were making a horror movie until he was an adult.
That's really good. I did not know that either.
As he should have not known. Exactly.
Meanwhile, poor Shelley Duvall was thrown into a fictional and a real nightmare.
Very true.
That's why we have so many messed up adult actors. Because they were thrown into way adult situations way too early. So, I kind of give kudos to any parents of those kids that sort of made sure they were sheltered. If they were put in a movie that had subject matter they probably didn't understand or weren't ready for.
That's also, this is weird to say, that's also not the job of the parents. That's the job of the production, is to keep the kids safe. The parents know what they're getting into when they really sign them up.
True.
Right, but...
yeah, because Roller Girl, Heather Graham from Boogie Nights, her parents kept her out of a lot of different roles. I think she was up for Poison Ivy, and her parents wouldn't let her do that role, and that's why she did Boogie Nights on her own and emancipated herself and does not have a relationship with her family.
I had no idea that was a thing either.
That seems just like a tad bit dramatic.
Well, it was holding her back, and also being Roller Girl was really good for her career. And then her career did kind of fizzle, but I don't feel that was the fault of Boogie Nights.
No,
it didn't. Or Austin Powers, too. We should do the Austin Powers movies.
I'm really surprised we haven't done them yet.
We just did a Scorsese movie.
That's very true.
Yeah. We have done more Netflix young adult adaptations to screen films on this show than we have Martin Scorsese films.
We've only done like two.
We've only done one.
No, I don't mean Martin Scorsese film. Well, I mean, I guess technically you're right. But I was going to say that we've only done two Netflix films. But maybe we've done...
five. We have done five.
Oh my gosh, she's sitting over there counting.
Well, there's three. There's three of the ones with the... what's her name?
All the Boys I've Loved Before. And yeah, we've only seen two of the Kissing Booth ones.
Yeah, so that's five. One, two, three, four, five.
You know, blame Martin Scorsese, because he should have made more films that fall into our criteria. So
he does. You can honestly,
okay, then blame yourself for not picking them.
I'm blaming you somehow. I don't know, it's your fault.
Is there anything else you want to discuss before we move into our categories?
Yes, it's not entirely your fault that we haven't done all of the Scorsese films.
Is there anything else I want to talk about? Can y'all hear me?
Yeah. Okay, can you hear me? That's the question.
Yes. Okay. I said, is there anything else we want to talk about before we move into our categories?
No,
I don't think so, because we've kind of covered most of what the movie is really about.
Okie dokie, then. John?
Okay. You don't remember the categories, do you?
This is not my film, so.
But this is still your show.
It is.
Okay, fine. All right, I guess we'll start with... I think we usually start with this category, so I'm going to go ahead and start with it. Did John like the soundtrack?
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't a lot to it. I mean, there was some Christmas music, some blues, some kind of 90s alt-rock song at the end credits. It was fine. If I found it on eBay for 99 cents, I probably would order it, but it was fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think there was a creepy or romantic moment, so I'm going to kind of skip to the Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay. Let's see. Rotten Tomatoes.
Wait, hold on. Before, we have to guess it.
Yes, I was getting on because I wasn't on there. I was on IMDb, actually.
Okay, John, what do you think the critic rating was?
I'm going to go with 68.
I have a feeling critics didn't highly rate this movie, so I'm going to go with like a 52.
All right. Well, actually, because I wasn't sure what the critic rating was until I looked it up. And because I remember liking this movie, but that doesn't mean anything because I was, 11 when this movie came out? So it is actually at a 69%.
What was it?
69%.
Oh, wow. John beat me this week.
Yep, I won the washer and dryer on Price is Right.
Because like the consensus is smart, sharp-witted, and fueled by enjoyable over-the-top action, The Long Kiss Goodnight makes up in impact what it lacks in consistent aim.
Okay.
Do you want to guess what the audience score is?
Yeah, it's usually higher. So, since it was like a 69%, I'm going to go with like a 81%.
Okay. Its budget was $65 million. It opened at $9 million. It grossed here $33 million, and worldwide it grossed $89 million. So it didn't completely bomb.
Yeah.
It just didn't perform what they wanted.
Yeah, that's actually not bad.
Yeah.
Does anyone want to guess how many stars out of 4 Roger Ebert gave it to?
2.
Yeah. Actually, 2.5.
2.5. Oh, wow.
Yeah. He said, I admired it as an example of craftsmanship, but what a lot of time and money to spend on something of no real substance.
That sounds about something he would say.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Not that we're here. Perfect.
Do what?
I said, not that we're here yet to that segment, but I cannot think of a more perfect description for this film.
Well, what is it Simmons says, Raj? He's a story guy. all right, question for you guys. Does this movie pass the Bechdel test?
I would say yes.
Yes. And the only reason is because the daughter and the mom are both named.
Yeah. Well, according to Bechdel movie... Bechdel test movie list, the website I've been using for the entirety of us doing this. Yeah, it passed 3 out of 3.
Okay.
Yeah, because when Charlie and her daughter are talking, they ain't talking about no man.
Nope, they're not.
But speaking of things they were or were not talking about, should we do best line, worst line?
Go for it.
Joseph, since this is your movie. And I'm not at all stalling.
No, I have some lines I really, really like in this movie. Okay. One of my favorites is whenever they get away from, I think it was Charlie, Brian Cox's character. She's like, I can't remember if it was that one or a little bit later. She's like, are you thinking what I'm thinking? He goes, I hope not, because I think of how much my balls hurt.
One of my favorites was, whenever he was putting the gun in his pocket and she's calling him out, she's like, it makes a bulge people can see. And he has, you want me to stick it in my pants and shoot my damn dick off? And it's like, now you're a sharpshooter? Like, ooh.
One of my all-time favorite ones is with Brian Cox. He's like, could you mind? My appetite and that dog has been coincided. He's like, it's been licking its asshole for the past 3 hours. Whatever is stuck up there is either dislodged or it's supposed to stay up there, so please stop it.
I love the are you stupid or did you take lessons?
That was really
funny. Yeah.
Oh, and, well, he says he
did take lessons.
Yeah, no, I guess my other one is kind of a worse line, so.
Yeah, I've got some that I thought were fun in the moment, but reading them back, and also you took a couple of mine. this is neither a best nor worst line, but I just feel this line should be addressed. It's a Sam line where he says, I'm always frank and earnest with women. In New York, oh, I'm God, frank, yeah. And in Chicago, I'm earnest.
That was...
Oh.
Like, oh, that's definitely what would be on that kind of show.
Yeah. Larry's like, I gotta write that down. Worst lines.
I don't know if this is a best or worst line. Like, I just can't decide. But when the little henchman guy goes, I'm hurt real bad, I think I'm dying, and he goes, continue dying. Out.
Yeah.
Oh, that was really good.
One of my worst lines is, everyone knows when you make an assumption, you make an ass out of you and umption.
Oh, and so, there's another one I liked, and it was less about how well the line was written, but I liked the delivery. When Mitch goes, Sam, I'll be waiting for you to come and rescue me. And she goes, be just a minute. I don't know. Yep. I think it was more about the delivery than the line, but I thought that was really good.
I thought that exchange worked.
Oh, it was this line I did like. When Brian Cox comes up and picks up Samuel Jackson, he goes, how'd you find out where we are? He goes, well, you wrote it on this, which with the drawing of a dick. He goes, that's not a dick, that's a duck. He's like, oh.
I mean, they do.
Anybody have any other worst?
I thought even though I do kind of enjoy it, where like chefs do that, that line cat a little old in the very beginning.
I liked it. Been done once.
Yeah.
Go
ahead.
I was gonna say, I have one other worst line, and it was just, I know it's the 90s and I know we're post Tarantino, and I'm a fan of profanity when done well, but I thought this line was stupid. It's another Sam line. I will see to it that you will spend the next 10 years in prison getting ass fucked. And if the case is thrown out because my arrest was too violent, I will personally hire men to ass fuck you for the next 10 years. So if you're in an ass fucking fan, go ahead and mouth off.
Yeah, I thought it was a little much.
And the weird thing is you hire Shane Black because he's great with dialogue.
Well, I mean, yeah. Like I said, we're not talking about it, but Kiss Kiss Bang Bang has like some of the most quotable lines.
You know, I know you love Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, and I'm glad that you do, but you have to go back to Lethal Weapon and get some of Shane Black's actual gems. Of course, he also said that he also wrote the line, 80s men cry. So they can't all be zingers.
No, I think we're ready to move on to our second to last segment, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Good. I know y'all got tired of the chef's do it line, but whenever she gets back her knife skills and she's like, I can't decide if I love that moment or hate that moment, but of them just like, let's just throw more vegetables at her to cut up.
It's a really good moment, but it kind of works, especially for the time it was made.
Yeah.
It could have gone really wrong, but I think that they did it well. Same, like, it was the same thing with the little exchange, you know, where she told him she would be just a minute. That kind of stuff, you always risk it being cheesy or it going really wrong. But if the delivery's right, which in this case I think it was, then it can go really well. It can work.
How did we feel about her husband in the... I kind of feel like the movie... I was kind of surprised that the movie didn't kill him like halfway through.
Yeah, and I didn't.
And I was like, I'm surprised they didn't kill him at the beginning.
Yeah.
But he did stick by her side. He kind of was supportive of her for the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is the film just made him ultimately... this is part of my bad. But he really was a purposeless character. And you never want to, like... I feel like what separates a exceptional movie from an average or a bad movie is what you do with your very, very minor characters. And not that he did a particularly bad job. He was just essentially pointless. The movie could have done the same thing without his character, or you could have killed him off really early.
If I'd been writing it, I probably would have killed him just to add some dramatic weight. And, you know, even though this movie has plenty of dramatic weight, you know, you might say a truckload of dramatic weight.
Ooh.
Yeah. I love the escape from the freezer. Whenever she's pouring the gasoline out of the doll that pees itself. Yeah. And then she's getting ready to light the match. And she goes, do you think we should get a dog?
I do like that part.
Yeah.
One of the good things I actually, that we haven't talked about is the ending. I thought the ending was really nice. It was kind of cathartic in a way. It tied everything up in a nice bow. Like, I was a little surprised because I will say this kind of ties into the bad, but while I loved her and Samuel L. Jackson's chemistry, and I've never seen him in a role where he's kind of like a semi-love interest, and I thought it worked really, really well. It sort of made the concept of her ending up going back to her husband at the end very weird.
Yeah, well, but you gotta remember, Samantha is married to the husband, and Charlie ain't married to no man.
Yeah, but I mean...
Also, they were pretty sure they were going to die.
True, but she's Charlie again. You know, I mean, she doesn't ever really go back to being Samantha. So, I mean, I guess she kind of does because she chooses to, but I don't know. Yeah. I just thought that they, as good as it was, they probably shouldn't have done it if they had the intent of her going back with her husband. Because it just, I don't know. Well, I think it played a little weird.
Well, that's what I really love about this movie, too, on it, is they could have just had Samuel Jackson's characters like, fuck it, we're going to have sex.
Yeah.
But it actually calls her out and says, like, are you just doing... I don't think you're doing this because you want to. You're just trying to bury the person that you were before or try to fuck her with your life. Like,
also, let's not forget that the last time he got blown, candy bars were a nickel, so...
That's true. Well, and I love that because she was ready to leave her family because she's like, to me, I don't know who they are. They're not my family. But when she got back, he kidnapped the kid and everything, and she was like, I can't not go rescue her.
Yeah.
Or try. I think she realized, like, I am her mother, and I do want to be her mother.
Yeah. And well, and the entire movie, the whole point is her burying both versions of who she was and emerging as sort of that balance of the two.
Yeah. And I think they did a really good job with that.
Yeah. So, I got a question. Does anybody watch Looney Tunes growing up?
Of course.
Yeah.
All right. Y'all, you know, every time the coyote would chase the Roadrunner and he would fly off a cliff and kind of make the yahoo-hoo-y kind of noise?
Yeah.
All right. Did anyone else have that playing in their head whenever Samuel L. Jackson was blown out of the hotel room through the sign and into the trees?
Yes.
I was like, this is some Looney Tunes shit.
I loved it, though.
Oh, yeah, it was great.
That does remind me of something else that bothered me, too, is that towards the beginning, when she was in her kitchen and that guy comes and tries to attack him and he blows her past her refrigerator, he definitely, like, the thing shot through the refrigerator, but the refrigerator was completely fine.
Also, let's talk a little bit about One-Eyed Jack. We haven't really gotten to because he's kind of a minor character, but the way he just loses it in prison, seeing her on the TV, I was just like, oh, someone over-prepared for the job.
And that fight scene between them two in the kitchen was really good.
Yeah. You know something that was really bad, though?
What's that?
The CGI background... whenever Charlie was visiting Samantha in her nightmares.
That is, like, some of the worst part of the movie. It's very 90s looking there. Like, very.
It was like, what kind of Mortal Kombat Annihilation opening titles for Any Given Sunday horse shit is this?
Upon coming out, I'm going to challenge you to Final Combat.
It's like, how can we permanently timestamp this movie into 1996? Here you go. Oh,
we found it.
Yeah.
That was I forgot all about that, but yeah, that is the cheesiest part of the movie.
It was like, they got the effects guy that did every Stephen King ABC miniseries in the 90s to do that.
That's a low blow.
Yeah, it's like I expected the Langoliers to pop up out of nowhere in Bronson Pinchot.
You know, the bad guy should have said, I'm scaring the little girl.
Yeah.
Scaring the little girl?
Which is the most offensive thing. No, not yet. I'm not done with the sentence. It's like, that's not even the most offensive thing that Stephen King has written for television. I'm still going to lay that down as kiss and kiss, and that's what I've been missing from the Shining miniseries.
God.
It's like, I know that is more that miniseries is more accurate to the book, but Jesus. you're gonna slander Kubrick and defend this. Cool. Anything else?
No, I think that's all I had.
Yeah. I think the only other thing is I think I'm still going to rewatch The Long Goodbye because of this movie. All right, so are we about to give this film a long kiss goodnight? Joseph, Sammy, did you survive this movie?
Yes, barely.
Barely?
It was tough sledding for me for a minute, but I do feel like that was the timing of watching it, and I feel like if I gave it a second watch or watched it when I was more in the mood, that I would have liked it better. And that's not really the film's fault, so I'm not going to hold it against it. And considering the movies that I have not survived, I'd probably prefer to watch this one. So I'm going to go with a barely. Even though
both of these guys
were tough sledding for me.
I was going to say, next weekend we're going to do a double feature of this movie in Sleepaway Camp. You know?
No.
Joseph?
Why don't we go with you? Because I think we know my answer.
Okay. So, I survived it. I think I was telling Sammy before the show, and I think I told Joseph, if there is a notch right above barely survived, I think that's where I'm at. I do think had I watched this film in 1996 and not watched it in 2022 with commercials shoved in every 10 minutes, I would have had a different viewing experience. And might have liked it more, maybe on Joseph's level, maybe not. I might feel the same way. I do see, but I did have fun watching this movie, even though I was ready for it to end, because Pluto was pissing me off, and I do think it was tainting my opinion just a little. So I would be curious to go back and actually watch the film start to finish uninterrupted. But at the end of the day, it was a fun film. I mean, it had some great dialogue. It had some terrible dialogue. It had good performances from Samuel L. Jackson and Geena Davis and Brian Cox. What more do you need some days? Also, I think I said this on the show, and I'm not sure if I did, but if I didn't, it was also fun replacing Craig Bierko in my head with Matthew Perry. Sometimes it's like imagining that weird alternate timeline, which does that also mean that Craig took over his part in the whole nine yards?
Yes.
And Fools Rush In?
Yes. All of his roles.
Yeah. Okay, so Matthew Perry gets all of Craig's roles. I would watch Matthew Perry as Professor Harold Hill.
Yeah.
So yeah, I survived. Joseph?
Well, there's no mystery here. I survived this movie. I love this movie. It's a childhood movie of mine, and something it's one of the movies that helped me, kind of made me fall in love with Geena Davis. I just thought she was great in it, and I'm not sure if this is I think Jurassic Park was the first movie I saw Samuel L. Jackson in that I remember. But also it kind of helped me love Samuel L. Jackson more and most things he does.
Yeah. Like, this movie came out two years after Pulp Fiction.
Jeez, it did. Is it? Oh, yeah. Man. I did not realize that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is just a really fun 90s action movie. It's ridiculous and over the top. It also has a lot of heart to it, and just has a pretty good story to it. It's some of the editing, it feels a little wonky at times, and some of the dialogue's not the best. But it makes up for the best, some really good acting and action. And also, so they do have some really good lines in it, especially from Brian Cox. He had some really great stuff.
Yeah.
That whole dog.
The answer is always. Oh.
I was going to say, the whole dog's asshole bit was just great.
Yeah. Also, just if you're asking yourself if you should put more Brian Cox into a movie, the answer is always yes.
Yes. Without question.
I actually kind of want to go back and watch Manhunter now. See him as a young Hannibal Lecter. With a K this time.
It's hard to believe, see him as Hannibal Lecter after Anthony Hopkins after all these years.
Oh, it's a different take, but it is equally chilling. And in fact, it's, I would say, more chilling than anything Anthony Hopkins did after Silence of the Lambs.
Really?
Yeah, because honestly, I mean, Hannibal was fine, but he was way more demented in the book. And the less said about that red dragon, the better.
Well, and also, Mads Mikkelsen did a great Hannibal. I forget he did the TV version.
He did. And thank God he doesn't do method acting. Fun fact on that show, every time I was watching it, I know you're supposed to be horrified and disgusted, but every time that man cooked, I was like, I guess I would eat human flesh. Jesus, this looks delicious.
He made it look very appetizing.
He did. I would watch a Hannibal Lecter cooking show. I'm just going to pretend this is beef or veal or some shit, you know. not the mailman.
Okay, before our last listener stops listening to cannibalism talk.
You haven't watched the NBC Hannibal series, and if you had, you would be right here with us. But anyway, so we're sending this movie off to bed, and God, next week, our old friend returns. One Nicholas Sparks. Because apparently I offended, you know, a fortune teller and, you know, took a button from her that was cursed, and now I'm paying the ultimate price. What the hell are we watching next week?
One of my personal favorite Nicholas Sparks movies, even though it stars one of my nemesis, The Last Song.
Is anyone dead in this movie?
No.
At the beginning, through the entire movie?
No, no one is dead at the beginning of this movie.
Yeah. Oh, God, I just realized this is the movie that The Climb came from, isn't it?
No. No.
Oh, it's not?
That's
oh.
Hannah Montana.
Oh, okay.
Yep. No, she's not like a singer in that movie. Not that they don't like go into her. She is a musician, but singing is not like the priority.
So no Party in the USA next week?
No Party in the USA.
I'm not doing it then.
Just a lot of arguing between John and I as we discuss who's better, Liam or Miley, and I am correct.
No.
This might be the first episode where I don't talk much. I just start eating popcorn.
That's fine, John. You just be wrong. Just sit there in your wrongness and be wrong and get used to it.
You haven't finished that series, have
yes,
you?
Yes, I have.
Guys, let's save this for the actual episode, okay? Because I don't have popcorn.
Oh, no.
You only
you know who we should
to the episode, by the way, and I have made it well past the episode, so.
Also, Joseph, next week, you know who would have been better in that role than Liam Hemsworth? Ben Affleck.
Oh! No. Also, that would have been very illegal because she was playing a teenager.
I'm not even going to... Okay, so Casey Affleck.
Oh!
Oh my God.
So, listeners, tune in for next week's argument and
just
callbacks.
No. Oh. Shots
the
fired
last
at
song,
the superior
direct,
Affleck.
Yeah. Anyway, the last song, directed by Roman Polanski, coming next week. Oh, surviving chick flicks.
Well, we're can.
Yes. By who? Each other?
Sure, why not cancel us all?
Yeah. All right, so since this is apparently our last episode, does anyone have any shout-outs they want to give?
Roman Polanski.
No,
I don't want to do
no. that. Stop. Keep that man's name out your fucking mouth. Sammy, you got any shout-outs this week?
No, not this week.
I'm going to give a shout-out to LeBron's Chips, the Flamin' Hot Cheddar Sour Cream Ruffles. that have fueled my afternoon and will be the mistake that keeps me up all night. All right. Well, Joseph, thank you for inflicting this movie upon me and Sammy. And Sammy, we just have to remember we were friends before the next week's episode, and we have to remain friends after.
That's fine.
If not,
even though Miley is better.
No.
Anyway, Team Miley for the win. Anyway, listeners, thank you for listening and putting up with this. It's been fun.
All right. You're just wrong.
You're wrong.
You're wrong.
Your face is wrong.
Oh, yeah, that was a good comeback, John.
You're wrong.
Surviving Chick Flicks is brought to you by the Circle of Jug. The show is edited by John, and all clips used are the property of their copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, and leave us a 5-star rating at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get the show. If there's anything you would like us to cover on the show, or just drop us a line at survivingchickflicks@gmail.com. The show is copyright 2022, Circle of Jug Productions, all rights reserved.
Just do that.